Our Old Testament reading is from the book of Jeremiah, the 31st chapter, verses 3 through 6 and 31 through 35. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. The Lord appeared to us in the past, saying, I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have dawned with you unfamiliar kindness. I will build you up again, and your virgin Israel will be rebuilt. Again, you will take up the thimbles and go out and dance with the joyful. Again, you will plant vineyards in the hills of Samaria. The farmers will plant them and enjoy their fruit. There will be a day when watchmen cry out on the hills of Ephraim, come, let us go up to Zion, to the Lord our God. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah. It will be like the covenant I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke my covenant. Though I will be a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant I will make with the people of Israel. After that time, declared the Lord, I will put my law in their minds. I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will they teach their neighbors or say to one another, know the Lord, because they will all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their wickedness and will remember their sins no more. This is what the Lord says. He who appoints the sun to shine in the sky, and who declares the moon and stars to shine by night, who stirs up the seas so that the waves roar, the Lord Almighty is his name. This is the word of the Lord.
Our New Testament passage is once again from 1 Corinthians 13. For the last time, it's kind of sad in a while. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable and it keeps no record of being wronged. Love does not rejoice with injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. Prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will all become useless, but love will endure forever. This is the word of the Lord. Thanksgiving is by far my favorite holiday. This week we stop and remember how much we have to be grateful for. We remember that we are each loved with an everlasting love. That God knows who we are, cares, has a place for us. No matter what else happens, what we have to be grateful for far outweighs any sadness or tragedy we might face. And it is so good to stop and celebrate and remember that. As Bill read from Jeremiah, God says, I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have put myself in your heart. I write my law of love within you. We each carry a piece of God. God dwells within us. And this is so much to be grateful for. A couple years ago, I saw the story of Adam Ralston. And I don't know if you might have seen this, but Adam loved golf. Loved golf so much that he decided to invent and then play the longest hole ever. It was over 2,000 kilometers, and he decided to do it across Mongolia. Maybe because there's less fences there. I'm not sure. But Adam Ralston spent quite a bit of time creating and designing a 1,200-mile par 14,000 golf hole. One hole that went across Mongolia and finished in the one golf club in Mongolia, in Ulaanbaatar. And he started off, and it went across swamps and mountains and deserts. He had to cross streams and ford swamps, and it took him 80 days, but he stayed at it. By the time he got to the golf hole in Ulaanbaatar, he was 6,000 strokes over par. When you feel bad about a bogey. But he stayed at it and finally finished precisely 6,093 strokes over at 20,093 strokes for one hole of golf. But he invented it himself, so I think it's his fault. But he did it. He said he felt incredibly proud in spite of the fact that he was over par. He did this for charity and said that he stuck with it and made it and was incredibly grateful to have done and had the experience. I think you would have to really love golf. Have you ever done anything very hard, difficult? Inevitably, when I find myself doing hard and difficult things, I am tempted to give up and to quit. But it is true, and the story of Adam Ralston reveals that what we deeply value and that which we deeply love, we don't give up on. As 1 Corinthians says, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes in all things, and endures through all things. Love never fails. We've spent the last couple months digging into this passage in 1 Corinthians, looking at love not as a feeling, but as a skill set, as a group of choices that we can make and get better at. And Paul's last assertion today, these four statements about love being willing to persist through all things, is a beautiful finale to what it might mean for us to love one another more effectively. In essence, love keeps on keeping on. It doesn't give up. Love, the first statement, love bears all things. Or as the NIV, I love the way the NIV actually puts this verse. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. The first statement, stig A, what love always does is to be willing to bear something else. And like we just talked about, most of us don't like having to bear things, right? You bear things you'd prefer not to have. Things that are heavy, things that are difficult, things that can be painful. But Paul says that in all things, love is willing to bear, to protect. It's the same phrase Paul says when he says, you, brothers and sisters, bear one another's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law. When we are willing to take, well, I don't know. If any of you spent any time looking in the mirror in the last week or two, but when I do, I realize that I am not perfect. But I still love being in relationship with other people, right? It is so good to have a spouse who's willing to commit her life to me because she finally found the perfect husband. And if you believe that, I've got a bridge. No, of course that's not how it works. We know this, right? We don't love each other because we're perfect. You didn't love someone else because you found a perfect person. You found someone else who you chose to love in spite of how they are. Someone else who chooses to love you in spite of the fact that you're not perfect either. And we know that this is the deep, powerful truth of love, is that love is not dependent on perfection. Love is willing to bear one another's imperfections. This is exactly what makes love so robust and so strong. And what love actually is that love is willing to bear these imperfections in one another, these quirks, these annoyances, these problems. I got to participate in a wedding yesterday. Maggie and Dan, it was my pleasure. I love weddings because And the standard vows, get this, right? That I take you to have and to hold in sickness and in health, in riches and in poverty. That love is love precisely because it is willing to commit to the other in spite of knowing things aren't always going to go well or easily. And this is what makes love so beautiful. And this is precisely true not just in marriage relationships, which I think are a wonderful model that God has given us for the structure of the world as a whole, but our love for one another in community, in church, in families, in jobs, in whatever relationships we find one another in this world. Love, when we are loving well, we are willing to bear with other people's imperfections. This is what love does. It is willing to take those into account and not sever our relationships because other people aren't perfect. This is grace. It is the only way relationships will ever work, because last I checked, there's no perfect ingredients, right? We as humans all have our flaws. We all have our areas where we're blind. We all have times where we can be selfish and ignorant to what we're doing and how it's affecting the people around us. Love is willing to endure and to protect in the midst of those things. Paul's next statement is that love believes. Pisteo, and I love talking about this word because it's the word that gets translated as faith, which, as you know, I don't love the word faith. I think it's a little bit shopworn and our connotations with it are a little bit religious. Faith we think of as believing a set of doctrines, perhaps. But faith is, the word pisteo is much more trust. And there is no relationship that is built on anything other than trust. This is precisely how we work together as a church. Patrick Lencioni, one of my favorite management consultants, actually puts out there, and this is kind of the culmination of his work, that business, any business organization, will never advance faster than its level of trust. The trust is also the foundation of our working relationships. Trust is the foundation of our families. To the extent you can trust your spouse, you are going to have a healthy, effective family. To the extent you trust your children and your children trust you, you end up having a healthy, that's the only way you're going to grow healthy kids, is by trusting them a bit. My grandpa, great-grandpa actually, for a while ran a boys' ranch. And I remember him telling me that one of the things he had to do in helping these boys who'd come out of troubled situations where they were making poor choices was actually extend them another opportunity again, to put them in places where they had responsibility and where their choices would matter. In other words, trust, right? Love is willing to continue trusting. And of course, that means sometimes we get hurt, right? Like, there's no way you trust other humans without occasionally having other humans let you down. Just like nobody trusts me without me occasionally letting other people down. But loving well means being willing to trust each other, being willing to be vulnerable in ways that extend ourselves to others, where we will be hurt if they choose poorly. But this is what love does. And to live our lives untrusting, which we of course could do, you can wall yourself off and refuse to trust any other humans. But this results in an incredibly impoverished life. We live best when we extend trust to the people around us, and when, of course, we ourselves act in ways that are trustworthy. This means, and this is its core, back to the golden rule, right? Treat others the way you wish to be treated. This is what it means to be trustworthy, to make sure that I am never using another human being for my goals. Because I don't ever want to be used for somebody else's goals. This means being willing to see each human as somebody worthy of respect, as a human being who is of immense value because they bear the image of God. It's helpful to remember that the point of our lives is not being put here not to be taken advantage of, right? And this is always one of those things in charitable giving. Well, how do I know what they're doing with my money? Maybe that's not the point. Maybe it's more important for us to live generous lives that are willing to give than it is making sure we're never taken advantage of. Because you can make sure you're never taken advantage of, but then you're never going to give to anyone else. Love, Paul points out, is willing to take the risk. This is what trust is. Trust and faith, by the way, the opposite of trust and faith, we tend to think of as doubt. This is not the opposite of faith. The opposite of faith is certainty. In fact, you can only have faith in those things you are not certain about. Otherwise, you just know it. No faith necessary. Faith and doubt go hand in hand. We can only trust in those areas where we do not have certainty, which is kind of a beautiful invitation, especially when we're talking about love, that love is willing to step into that uncertainty, to trust even when we do have doubts and concerns. This is what love does. This is what God is inviting us into. The next thing Paul says is that love always hopes, or in all things, love holds on to hope. I think this is a profound statement. If I had more time, I'd split the series out and would have taken each one of these one at a time, because I think this one gets underrated. What is it to hope? Look forward to something, which means looking, hoping for the good, right? I mean, you don't hope something bad's going to happen. That's a contradiction in terms. When we hope, we are expecting something good, desiring something good. Think about what this means in our relationships with each other. For us to hope in someone else means looking for, calling forth, pointing ourselves at that which is good in them. Have you had somebody else hope in you before? It's almost the same as believing in you, right? We say, yeah, I believe this kid can learn how to read. Even if it's taken him 27 tries, love hopes. Love looks for the good. This is an area this is where we can develop our musculature as good lovers in a very poignant and practical way, because our brains tend to be wired to do the reverse. We key in on negative things so much faster and sharper than on positive. I guess it was important to avoid poisonous berries more than it was important to remember great, great blueberries. But in any event, that can be incredibly damaging in our interpersonal relationships. It is so easy to get crosswise where we are focused on what is wrong with someone else, how someone else is bothering us, instead of what we appreciate about someone else. Right? I mean, most marriage counseling boils down to this. When a couple gets to a point where they're focusing on the things that they don't like about their partner and forgetting about the things that attracted them in the first place, that marriage is probably done if they can't turn that around. And they're creating hell even if it's not done. This is what we can change. We change how we think, right? We get to focus on what we want to focus on. You get to look at what you want to look at. And our brains are so good at helping out with this project. What you look for, you find. If we are looking for ways other people are bad and wrong and stupid and selfish, what are you going to find? Exactly that. You're going to have more and more evidence that this other human or these other humans or this other group is just beyond your compassion, that they're not worth your time, that they're irascible and inconvertible and give up. But of course, the reverse is true too. When we start looking for the good in the people around us, we start seeing more and more beauty, more and more of what they have to offer. And of course, when that is what we're looking for and that is what we're keyed in on, that is what we start calling forth from them in our relationship with them. If somebody comes to me and is looking for a fight, they're way more likely to find it, right? If somebody's looking for why I'm going to be a jerk, they're going to set me up in a position that I'm probably very likely going to behave in that way. But the reverse, of course, is true too, and this is our incredible agency and freedom in loving well, is that we get to decide how we invest ourselves in these relationships around us. And our brains are going to be on board. I mean, if this is the classic example, right? If you've ever thought about buying a different kind of car, what do you all of a sudden start noticing all over the place? That car. Was there more of them? No, your brain's just all of a sudden, oh, this is what we're doing today. Let me help you. Our brains screen out so much information. There's no possible way your conscious self could assimilate all the data that you observe every day. And so what your brain does is ignore the things that you're not looking for and bump up the things that you are, which is, of course, really dangerous as well when we start looking for the bad in other people, because it's going to blind us to all that is good and beautiful and wonderful and true. And then we think, how accurate is your picture compared to reality? Our brains are wonderful tools, but also very dangerous in this. As the ancient rabbi says, you do not see the world as it is. You see the world as you are. Yeah, our perceptions color so much of what we see. And this invitation to loving well is, of course, connecting that with our relationships, that what we are looking for in each other matters so much in how well we love. Are we willing to look for the good in one another? To suspend our criticism and our negativity and decide instead to be hopeful? This is what it means to love well. The last thing Paul says is that love remains. Hupomene. To persevere, to endure, to stay. Love keeps on going and doesn't quit. And I think this might be one of the most important qualities of love, is that love is willing to remain present with the other. We never know what life is going to do, right? The rest of today is still a mystery. Tomorrow, absolute mystery. I mean, I'm hopeful that I'll still be here, but there could be a dump truck out there with my name on it that I meet later today. One never knows. But love is willing to remain in the interim, to be able to stay with each other through whatever we may face. I think this is one of the core, if I boiled love down to two definitions, it is that love is for the other and love is with the other. That this is what love does, is it stays encouraging, benevolent, wishing you are good and present with each other through what we're going through. This is one of the best gifts we give to each other, because we all have highs and triumphs and joys. We all have lows and discouragements and failures. And what love is willing to do is to remain with each other as we walk these paths. Love endures all things. I think Jesus gives us an incredible picture of what this love actually looks like. The incarnation, that God was willing to leave heaven and become one of us. Love becomes what it loves. God becomes one of us, with us. That Jesus is willing to even suffer with us. We experience suffering and God experiences suffering with us. As Jesus said in John 15, "This is my command. Love each other as I have loved you. And there is no greater love than this, than to lay your life down for one another." And at the cross, that is what we see God doing for us, that love does not even quit, even when it is getting killed. And what is amazing in this to me, and so powerfully inspiring and hopeful, is that in the cross we see that love is stronger than violence. We tend to think we'll love until something starts getting bad, and then you've got to push back. But Jesus doesn't. Jesus, in fact, says to his disciples, when Peter's talking to them, he says, I could call 12 legions of angels to my side right now. I could end this. I do not have to go through with this. But that's not the way. As hard as it is for us to comprehend this, love is stronger than violence. That's the story. That what Jesus does on the cross, of course, violence doesn't win. Death doesn't win. Love is stronger than even the greatest evils in our world. This is why we as Christians are bought into this way of love, that we fight back, but not with the weapons the world uses. We are called to respond to evil, not with evil, but with love. Love is stronger. Love never gives up. Love is hard. Love means not quitting, even in the face of death. I'm hopeful, and even Jesus got discouraged with this, right? This is the story in Gethsemane of him saying, my God, and on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? But he doesn't give up, and he keeps going, and he keeps loving us. We live in a world that can, of course, be very unloving. As Jesus is talking about it in Matthew 12, I'm going to read this. This is one of my favorite statements. It's almost everybody Matthew 24. This is the Olivet Discourse where Jesus is talking about wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and times and things being bad. And this is his statement. Sin will be rampant everywhere, and the love of many will grow cold, but those who endure to the end will be saved. In a world that is unloving, continuing to love is what we are called to. Just because the world out there doesn't love well doesn't let me off the hook. I can love well anyway. In fact, what better light to offer? What place is light needed more than the darkest night? In fact, the darker and the worse things getting, the brighter love is going to shine. This is the incredible gift and call and purpose for our lives, that we can offer unconditional love in a world that is completely wrapped up in other things: power, violence, greed, acquisition. We love. It's the most beautiful, best gift we could possibly offer. And as we let that love shine forth, we remember that this is, of course, bearing the love, the eternal, everlasting love of God Himself. There's nothing more valuable we could be doing. As Paul says here in verse 8, prophecy, speaking in unknown languages, knowledge, all becomes useless, but love endures forever. A couple years ago, I was running a race and looked over and saw a guy pushing a younger man, his son, in a wheelchair. And they actually had a bunch of people around them and some news crews and some signs and t-shirts that said Team Hoyt. So I got done with the race and I went and looked it up, and it's a fascinating story. The son's name was Richard Hoyt, and he had been born, when he was being born, the umbilical cord got wrapped around his neck, caused oxygen deprivation to his brain, and he has severe cerebral palsy. The doctors told his parents just to put him in an institution, but they refused. They saw him tracking them around the room with his eyes and said, we think he's of value anyway. We want to take him home. And they did. And they took care of him. And about the time he was 11, technology got to the point where he could, they've got a computer that allows him to speak by using this computer to manipulate things, and discovered that, of course, like, he was this very intelligent human being inside that body. He can't control his muscles, but he has this rich personality, these perspectives on the world, these hopes, these desires, these sadnesses. And it wasn't too far after that that he told his dad, "I want to run a 5K. Well, he can't move his body, but his dad said, "Okay, let's do it together. I'll put you in the wheelchair." And his dad had never run a mile before in his life. But hey, my son said he wants to do it. We're going to do this together. And so his dad takes Richard and puts him into the, finds it, especially at the time, I mean, this was a long time ago, they didn't even have, like, you know, handicapped running wheelchairs. This was, his dad had to, like, go out in the garage and start welding things together, but designs this running wheelchair for his son, and they do a 5K together. And Rick tells his dad when they get done, "I felt so alive out there. It felt so good. Let's do another one." So they do. And let's do a longer one. And they do. And by the time I had seen Team Hoyt running in the race I was at, they had done over 70 marathons together. 32 Bostons. They've done 6 full Ironmen, like the full triathlon course. He has a raft that he puts his son in and swims, and then a special bike carrier cart that he puts him in, and they bike together. And they do these races together because love never gives up. This is what God does for us. Of course, this is of what other, there is no other kind of love. My love is everlasting. We are loved just like that. And we are invited into loving one another just like that, because that is what love does. We each have a priceless and beautiful gift to offer this world around us, because we too can love by bearing all things, believing in all things, hoping in all things, and enduring through all things. Amen.